when the humans were traveling across the Pacific on these tiny wee boats traveling by the stars. Like, the reason we got there was not because people thought, I really want to make a boat, and I just really want to, you know, set up a project here and count out all the wood and give everyone meaningful work to do in the community. No, it was the longing that got us there. And the real reason that humans achieve anything is out of love, not out of just abstract ideas.
We're so busy getting them to collect the wood that we're not sitting down and letting them express what's in their heart, because as they express what's in their heart, it comes together.
Hello and welcome to Restless Sanctuary from Sanctuary First, our new podcast about faith, restlessness, and the search for meaning. I'm James Cathcart, and I'm joined once again by Albert Bogle.
Great to be with you, James, and looking forward to this discussion we're going to have on this whole theme that we're going to be looking at today.
Absolutely, because this week we want to think particularly about this phrase, room at the table. Room at the table, which is our theme for Advent. But wider than that, we want it to be a kind of underlying theme for the whole next year, really. We're going to be carrying it into the next year as we go into Lent and Easter and Pentecost. This idea of what is the implication of saying that there is room at the table? There is still room. There is room for you. The invitation, the offer that God gives, that the Christian community has, is left open. It's left open for you.
Yeah, it just seems to be a theme that runs the whole way through the Bible, doesn't it? That there is always room at the table. Even in the Passover feast, there was room at the table for the stranger to come and be part of the Passover. There's always room. And that whole picture of Jesus in his parables continually giving us this idea that we can make room. We can make room for the outcast. We can make room for the person who is looked down upon. Let's make room for them. And let's hear what they have to say. It's such a great theme to be having as we approach Christmas.
And I think, you know, as we have got started on this series and talking about this, the sense of restlessness that we have, you know, both as ourselves as restless Christians, but also in wider society, there's a lot of restlessness about, and there's a yearning, I think, for belonging. And this idea that perhaps, you know, that we looked at previously in the podcast, that, you know, maybe sometimes we end up focusing on people's heads. We end up focusing on the ideas, the concepts, the projects. And we miss the heart and we miss the sense of belonging that, you know, in the first instance, in the first place, people want to feel like they belong, like they're part of something. It's a natural human instinct that we want to come alongside the fire. We want to come to the table. And so much happens at the table, whether it's meals, whether it's, you know, meetings and deciding things or making stuff. You know, the table has always been at the center of our homes and our lives. And for us, of course, as well, we think about the communion table. And that open invitation to join in communion that links us beyond time and space, that takes us back to that table of Christ where he offered that meal.
Yeah, you know, have you ever turned up at someone's house during mealtime unexpectedly? And then you're aware that they're all sitting around the table, maybe having a meal, and you're just delivering something, and then you're moving on to do something else. And you're immediately aware that you're kind of interrupting the meal. And then someone says, oh no, come and join us, pull in the table. We'll make space for you, come and be part of it. And you say, no, I've eaten already. Well, you'll have a cup of tea with us anyway. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing that maybe if there's somebody looking in on our podcast and you're thinking, well, it's not really for me. We're saying, just come and join us anyway. Have a cup of tea with us. If you're not going to stay for the rest of the series or the other podcast, why don't you just join us for this one, you know, and be part of what we want to talk about and share. And we want to hear your comments. And because we've been getting some comments back from people on the podcast that have been very positive.
Yes, at time of recording, we have now actually launched. And so this is the first episode where, you know, we've been able to hear some feedback, and it's been really lovely to hear. So thank you for that, and it's encouraging as we continue on this restless journey, this restlessness. And I think it's so important, Albert, isn't it, to feel like you're part of something, to feel like you belong. And I think, you know, in modern life, it can be quite easy to feel untethered. It can, you know, you can feel like, well, what do I really care about? What am I really part of? Who, you know, who's going to miss me if I'm not there, if I don't show up, if I'm not part of something?
Mm-hmm.
So to know that there's this reservoir for us, you know, there's this endless deep well that we can draw from, the table is there. And I remember when you first told me about this theme, and when we were looking at it over the summer, you were saying to me about this idea of the kind of suspicion that's in the world. There's a lot of antipathy, and there's a lot of sense of people being pit against one another. And what often underlies that is a climate of fear and a climate of scarcity. You know, this idea that there isn't enough. There isn't quite space enough. So if, you know, if the ship's going down, or the supplies are running low, then, you know, who are we looking after first? Who's our top priority?
Mm.
And then who is a threat? Who compromises us? Who's a risk to us? And obviously the media, politics, you know, across culture, there are a lot of forces that use these fears, these natural fears that people have, that just because they're natural doesn't mean they're good or they're well-founded. But as humans, we naturally have fears that we're going to make it through the day, that we'll have enough stuff. And so one of the things that I think is so compelling about this idea of room at the table is it's just very succinctly telling you that there is enough room. There is enough room at the table.
There is enough room. And also that wonderful passage in the scripture where it says, perfect love casts out fear.
Mm.
And when we are Christians, one of the things that we realize it makes us a human being and makes us a person in a biblical sense and in a theological sense is to know that we are loved by God.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. to know also that if I am to be a person, I have got to show love toward other people. So I cannot treat a person as an object. If I treat a person as an object, then I am using them.
Yeah.
And I cannot use another person. I can only interact with them and be in relationship with them in order that I might serve them and love them and in a turn receive that fellowship and that love back. So this whole idea of our identity means that we cannot just simply say, there's no room for you, because that's to treat you as an object.
Mm-hmm.
But there is room for you because you're made in the image of God and you're part of the creation that God has made. And therefore God calls us to live in harmony with one another and to find ways in which we can truly love and accept one another and find a way that we can live in harmony together.
Mm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, with you saying there about harmony, and I think that one thing about that table metaphor as well is that we're side by side at the table. You know, you might be sitting across from someone, but when you come and join the table, there are people on either side of you, you know, and so you're coming alongside other people. It's less kind of antagonistic. It's less kind of head on. You're sitting together. You're letting your guard down together. You're coming beside one another. And it's often, you know, at the table where we learn to be who we are. You know, there's this idea of like for children, you know, as they grow up and they learn to sit at the table, they're learning what it is to be human. They're learning, you know, through not just as in that we give them lessons or we talk to them about things, but they're just observing all the time what it means to share, what it means to talk, what it means to wait your turn, what it means to participate, what it means to be left out, to miss the boat. That kind of thing. We learn how to be at the table. And so the same applies from our kitchen table as the communion table. You know, are we living a life where we take what God has given us and then we pass it on? Or are we living a life where we just hoard and grab everything we can get? Imagine, Albert, if communion was like that, if the bread was out on the table and you went 3, 2, 1, go!
Yeah.
And everyone who's gathered for communion has to run to the table like a game show, and they just got to grab as much bread as they can.
Yeah.
And that's like stage one of communion. How much bread can you shove in your pockets? And then everyone who's got bread can then enter stage two of communion, which is a race to the wine. So anyone who didn't get any bread, sorry, you're out. You're disqualified. Now we have to race again, reset. you know, it'd be mad, wouldn't it? It'd be bonkers. And so the steps that we have to share, that we have to pass it on, is all hugely symbolic.
Also, that whole picture of manna from heaven in the Old Testament, where the children of Israel were in the wilderness and they experienced the supply of food.
Mm.
It was take enough for a day, but if you take too much, it will rot in your hands. Enough for the day, enough for a day at a time. And Jesus continually talks to us about that, about living our lives in such a way that it's a day at a time, rather than thinking we've got to hoard.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's like I was saying before about our kind of natural fears, like it's part of our psychology, you know, is this urge to survive, this urge to keep going, to persevere. And it's natural as part of that that you would want to grab what you can get for you and yours. But in the long run, that just leads to more inward looking, more downward looking, and eventually petering out and extinction. And that actually the long-term survival of humanity is down to our ability to share, to compromise, to pool our resources together, to be more than the sum of our parts. And it's our belief as restless Christians that God gives us a way of doing that, that God provides a framework for us to do that. Because otherwise, do you know what I mean? I'd hod all the bread, you'd have nothing left. I'd soon run out, then there'd be nothing and it'd be curtains, you know, like
yeah,
the only
absolutely.
Way we are resilient as a people is if we learn to share. And if we say, yes, there is room at the table, even when it hurts sometimes, even when it's difficult to extend that invitation to say that there is room, for it to make sense, we really have to say that there is room, that we will continue to leave that door open and we will continue to make room.
And I think when we start thinking about this too, James, we need to realize that sometimes room at the table, making room at the table, is a costly thing.
Yeah.
And that's why the cross of Christ, when we talk about how God makes room for us at the table, he's making room for us at the table because he has gone to a great extent. The bread and the wine is a symbol. If we're talking about the communion table to begin with,
mm-hmm,
becomes
mm-hmm.
a symbol of God coming among us and making space and taking into himself our suffering, our shame, the very thing that should stop us from coming to the table because we are ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
He has taken the shame into himself. And in doing that, has cleared the way for us to come to the table. And when we take the brokenness and share our brokenness at the table, we're also sharing in the brokenness of God, who has broken himself in love to bring us into the table, into the community of his love and his fellowship and his family.
Yeah.
And so this whole area, James, that we're talking about just now around the analogy of a table, it's a much deeper thing that we're really talking about. What does it mean to live in community and communion, and why community is so important? And that you cannot live your life as an individual on your own, doing your own thing. That's a philosophy that is a philosophy of failure. It will not work. And if you try and live your life that way, sooner or later, you are going to end up alone and becoming an object. You will turn yourself into an object.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you will no longer be in relationship with people. And it's only that God thing that brings us into, gives us that spirit that allows us to turn from individualism into understanding what it means to live in relationship with God and to live in relationship with our fellow human beings.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And for you and I, you know, as Christians and the tradition we come from, you know, we can put this in a certain language, you know, and we can talk about God and about how, you know, we're meant for one another, we're intended for one another and community and so on. But even if not, I think this is actually like, even if that's not your experience, not your background, you've never been to church or been part of anything like that, we, I think, can recognize that universal feeling of being brought back to yourself. You know, like that sense of you see old friends, you see people who've known you for a long time, or maybe your family or whatever, you reconnect something and you suddenly feel like yourself again. You know, I think that's a fairly common human experience, that, isn't it? The idea that, you know, if we've been isolated, if we've been lonely, if we've been apart from other people, we don't actually become more ourself, do we? Often we end up fading away a little bit. We feel like we're less ourselves. And actually we discover who we are in relationship with other people. It's through having conversations with other people. It's through connecting to other people that we find ourselves. And so for you and I, Albert, we extend that to the universe. We extend that to God. And we say that actually we can be in conversation with God. And that that's done through our lives shared with other people. And actually it has to be done through shared life with other people.
I used to say to the congregation at Bowness that we would like our place to be like a colony of heaven. And it's not a phrase that I made up. It's a phrase that's been used in Celtic theology and Celtic thinking. But the Celts had this idea that the monastery was almost like a colony of heaven, where people could come and be protected and feel sanctuary. In some ways, I think that's what we're trying to make sanctuary first, a kind of colony of heaven where people can come and with their searching mind and feel they're going to encounter something that draws them into a place of acceptance and love. And from that comes this idea of we love him because he first loved us. See, this whole thing is not dependent on you at all, but it's dependent on when we come into the community of God's people, something draws us, but it's that idea that we are loved by God and we have been loved by God and that God loves us. And we're drawn to him because he first loved us. And that becomes the magnet. And that's why if you're listening to this podcast and you say, I'm not really interested in religion and God and all that, but you've been listening to this because you're drawn to something that's saying there are things there that I feel that warms my heart to think that could be true. You're not just a bundle of ideas that eventually is just going to die out, but you're a person made for eternity with a purpose and with an engagement that God has for you, for your life, to make a difference in the world and to create a greater community of love within our world.
Yeah. Because, you know, when it comes down to it, you are lovable. We may not always feel lovable. We may sometimes feel beyond love, not worthy of love, not up to it. But we are loved. We are lovable. And, you know, the only way, I talk about this a lot, you know, in the various bits and pieces I write, you know, but the only way that we get here is through love. You know, and we have imperfect upbringings and people go through terrible things, but the only way that humanity survives, that we grow up, that we learn speech, that we learn to breathe, to live, to be human people, is because love was invested in us. And in a cosmological sense, you know, we can say like that God loved us, but also just in terms of our human experience, somebody took the time for you, invested in you in some way. You were loved into being. And I've been reading, I mentioned it in our previous podcast episode, but You Are What You Love by James K.A. Smith. I've been looking at this book, and his whole thing is about this idea of the centrality of what we long for, you know, that we desire things, that sometimes we get all in our heads about stuff and we miss that, you know, what really motivates us as humans is what we love. And because our podcast here is about restlessness, this idea that our bodies already tell us, don't they, that we're restless. You know, if you stay in one position for too long, you start to fidget, you get uncomfortable, and it's time to move. And in the same way, when we're you know, in our relationships or in our work or in other aspects of our lives, we feel restlessness. And we can try and fight that restlessness and go, no, I'm going to be serene. I'm going to be as serene as possible. I'm not going to be restless. I'm going to be serene. But we're on a hiding to nothing because the human body is designed, you know, is built to be restless, to feel sensations, to have longings. So I thought I'd quote this thing, Albert, from, which is actually from this chapter I was reading this morning, but it's him quoting, so James Smith quoting, so you know The Little Prince, the story of the little prince?
Yeah, yeah.
And I might murder the name here because I can't remember how to pronounce his surname, but Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, something like that. So the guy who wrote The Little Prince, he once wrote this. He said, if you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood. And don't assign them tasks and work. Rather, teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. And that just knocked my socks this morning when I read that phrase. So that was James Smith quoting Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. But the idea that I think often when we're trying to succeed in the church or in life or in business or whatever, we're telling people to collect wood. We're saying, look, we've costed this plan. We've done the measurements. We need this many nails. We need this much timber. And we forget that the reason that humanity got to Australia, that we've got to the moon, is because there is a longing in us for, as he quotes here, the immensity of the sea. That's what gets us to the moon. You know, when the humans were traveling across the Pacific on these tiny wee boats, you know, charting, you know, traveling by the stars, like the reason we got there was not because people thought, I really want to make a boat and I just really want to, you know, set up a project here and count out all the wood and give everyone meaningful work to do in the community. No, it was the longing that got us there. And the real reason that humans achieve anything is out of love, not out of just abstract ideas.
That's wonderful, isn't it? It's just such a wonderful reminder of the importance of understanding this idea that within us all can be generated a vision for what can be, for what is in our heart. We just need to allow that kind of opportunity for people to begin to express what's in their heart.
To catch the vision.
Yeah. And so often we're so busy getting them to collect the wood that we're not sitting down and letting them express what's in their heart. Because as they express what's in their heart, it comes together. You know, your vision and my vision and someone else's vision begins to see the unity of what is being sought after. And therefore, then people will collect wood without being forced to.
Joyfully, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. They'll want to grab that wood. They want to do that extra bit, go the extra mile. And, you know, as James Smith says in the book here, you know, it's not so much a matter of, like, do we love things or do we worship things? You know, it's a sense that the human being does that. That's what we do. We lean. There's a bit where he talks about how, like, humanity has lived leaning forward. Like, that's what we do. People worship stuff. So you can't go, like, I don't believe in anything. I don't worship anything. Like, there will be things that you worship. You know, that is a way of talking about the investment, the emotional investment we put into things. You know, people don't just punch their cards and do their time. You know, like, we do things out of this longing. And we find things to worship. And sometimes these things that we worship are good and healthy and can take us so far. But often, of course, times they're not. And we can end up, generally speaking, a lot of the things that we worship will creak under the pressure eventually. Like, who can live up to the worship of billions and billions of people? You know, who or what cause can really live up to that worship? And so that's one of the reasons, if you like, that we find that expression through Christianity, what it means when we say, you know, because I think, Albert, sometimes when we talk about being Christians, people don't necessarily know what that actually means. Like, what does it actually mean to be a Christian? What are you saying that you're thinking in your head? And actually, some of it is what we're thinking in our head, but also it comes down to this sense of, like, this longing that we have, this sense for meaning, for purpose, this restlessness, and that in God we encounter that, we meet that, we form a relationship with what that means, rather than simply just you know, a mental exercise.
Yeah, it's to do with this relationship again with Jesus. You know, he says, come, mm-hmm. follow me, and I will make you fishers of folk. Come, follow me, mm-hmm. and we'll create and build a community of love and fellowship and care. And come, follow me, and we'll find a place of fulfillment where we can use our gifts and our talents and upbuild one another in a sense of love and joy. And all of that is all contained in this idea when Jesus says, come, follow me. Deny yourself. Because if you deny yourself, you'll discover new freedom. It's not about all about you, but it's about being part of something much bigger. And deny yourself in order to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's sometimes we need to take that on board. Deny yourself in order to be loved. Because if we are so caught up with ourselves, we'll never really experience love.
There's got to be that openness, hasn't there? There's got to be that vulnerability to experience love. And sometimes we have to get out of our own way in order to do it. And I think, you know, when Jesus says, like, come follow me, there's a recognition there that we want to follow, that we are people who follow things, that we want to go somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, our path to enlightenment is not to sit and go deeper and to go further in, you know, or to tune in and drop out or whatever, you know, the kind of 60s sort of phrases, you know, the idea that we're going to drift off somewhere. It's the sense that we're restless, we're active, we want to move, we want to follow, we want to have something to believe in. And I remember you talking to me, Albert, about, you know, this phrase about adventure. Like, are we as Christians today offering people adventure? Are we saying that coming to Christianity is starting an adventure? Because I think if Christianity has a message of, like, you know, okay, we're just going to stay put. We're just going to stay here. Like, do X and Y and just stay here, please. Turn up at this time, this appointed place. It's not necessarily speaking to that longing to go somewhere.
Do you know, it's something, James, as we come to this whole theme over Advent, Room at the Table, we produced a whole lot of material that we want people to engage with. So if you're listening to this podcast, you might want to see, well, where is this all going? Well, we want to journey with you to maybe have a look at our material and the material that we've published. It's on the site. You can actually also get it in booklet form. And there's 5 weeks of reflection. You can either do it on your own or you can do it in community with other people.
What is a connect group? Well, a connect group is a group of people connecting to look at the Bible or to look at a particular course that's been developed. I've been running Connect groups for a long, long time and have thoroughly enjoyed them. I've enjoyed the fact that we can study things together. We can look at the Bible and ask questions, ask difficult questions, ask silly questions, and not be bothered about what the answers are. We can explore it together.
There's Room at the Table. And there's 5 areas. Do you want to open those 5 areas up to us, James? Those themes each week to get people to start thinking about what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we love an extended metaphor at Sanctuary First. And so we have just run with this over 5 weeks. So that's 5 Sundays, starting with the first Sunday of Advent. And so the first week is leaving room, hope and expectation. So we're asking, like, what are we leaving room for? Because part of making room, of there being room at the table for us, is that room has to be left at the table for us. You know, if you're laying out the table, you need to leave room for others. But what are we leaving behind, perhaps, when we come to the table as well? And then the next week is finding room, harmony and flourishing. So we're thinking about where are we finding the room? Where are there possibilities, bubbles of opportunity, possibility before us, and are we finding ourselves in one another, like in the harmony and flourishing? Then we've got room enough, hospitality and generosity, we're thinking a little bit about, you know, the kind of wider picture of like social justice and the Magnificat's, Mary's song that Mary sings when she meets Elizabeth, and this idea that, you know, what is the radical edge of saying that there is room at the table? If there's room enough, then some people perhaps need to budge up in order to make room. Another working title for this theme was Budge Up. And then as we get to Christmas itself, there's Making Room, and the idea of the welcome and the belonging, the life-changing power that there is when humanity made room for Christ, when Mary made room for Christ, and when Jesus made room for us. And then finally, as we look into the new year, it's room to spare, room for all the world. So we're going to be thinking kind of wider about creation, the whole world, the cosmos, the universe, about the idea there are sort of huge implications that come for there being room enough for all of us.
And also then, on top of all that, we've also commissioned five stories, Christmas stories, about making room. And they're great stories written by Lily Cathcart. And they're all about, again, just people engaging with the thing they're longing for. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden discovering it in a most unusual way. So I don't want to tell you too much about the stories, but these stories are there as part of our Advent adventure, journeying with some people, and sometimes in seeing and reading their story, seeing ourselves.
And there's a song, Albert, there's a Christmas song as well, all about room at the table. You and Ian and the rest belting it out. It's got proper Springsteen vibes. I love it.
Absolutely. And I'm so delighted that Graham Duffin, from who plays with Wet Wet Wet, has been the producer of it. So the song is really, it's an emotional song. It's really talking about there is room at the table.
Yeah.
You know, and let's break bread together. And let's get together and let's see if we can make a difference this Advent time. So the song encapsulates or gathers up everything we've been talking about on this podcast and says, there is room for all, there's room for you, there's room for all kinds of people.
And it's Christmas Eve and you're singing the blues. Come tell me your story.
And then, of course, there's the labyrinth.
Yes.
This labyrinth has been designed to encourage you to make a journey, to follow the star like the wise men of old, to find the child in the manger who is the saviour of the world.
And again, you can download that and you can have that on the, it will be on the app. I think sometimes we don't talk enough about our app, James.
I know. It's one of these things. The idea of Sanctuary First, you know, we want to be there for your journey. We want you to take us with you. The idea of Sanctuary First is that it's a sanctuary that is, in a way, restless. It's on the move. The sanctuary is not fixed in one position. We're blessed not to have any one fixed location. So the virtue of the app, if you like, is it allows us to create a new space that maybe we have a little bit more involvement throughout. You know, when we perch on different social media platforms, we're obviously just, we still want to do that. We want to be a little entry point in the midst of that. But what we're hoping to develop more and more with the app and our own material is to create a different kind of space, a different quality of space where you can spend some more time in that sanctuary. But yes, the Advent Labyrinth is a series of audio meditations that you can listen to. And so that's going to be available as well.
And you know, the thing is, if you take time to go on the labyrinth journey, it's well worth it, because again, it's a journey and it's talking about going on a journey to the manger and to the stable. But in reality, we're taking you on a journey to the table, because when you come out of the labyrinth, you come to the table. And some churches were involving and encouraging people to take the installation and to install, have an installation of a walk around, an actual physical labyrinth that people can walk around and go to different stations. And then when you come out at the very end, there is the table with the bread and the wine. And the invitation is to take the bread and the wine and take your place at the table.
And
that's the thing. Are you willing to take your place at the table?
That's it. It's your choice. It's up to you. Are you going to come? Are you coming to the table?
And you know, maybe that's a good place for us to stop this podcast and just say that to one another. Are you willing to take your place at the table and engage at the table and receive what is to be given to you at the table? And of course, that will take us into, as we go forward, into the whole idea of what we receive at the table, then how we then use the gifts we receive at the table.
Exactly. What are you taking from the table? Where are you going next? Absolutely, because we're restless. And so I think you're right, Albert. I think, you know, this is probably a good point to wrap up this part of the conversation about restlessness. But I would say as well, just to encourage you, that if you are feeling restless, if you're feeling agitated, if you're feeling uncomfortable, you don't need to deny that. You don't need to squash that. You don't need to hide that. You know, you don't need to think that that is in some way antithetical, that that's in some way in opposition to finding purpose and meaning, because it could be that it's through that restlessness, it's through that discomfort, it's through that unease that you will hear the invitation to the table. Because if you're sat at another table and you're just, you know, sat minding your own business, getting on with things, you may not hear the invitation, you may not feel the call. And so your restlessness could be the very way that you find the table, that you find God, that you find meaning and purpose in your life through your restlessness. So if you're uncomfortable, if you're unsure, you know, you're in church, but you're not loving it, or you're out of church and you're kind of not loving it either. You're in a community, you've got one foot in the door, whether it's with us or someone else. Don't worry. No need to be worried. No need to be worried. And actually, that restlessness just speaks to your heart and what's in your heart and what your heart wants, what your heart longs for. And it's through coming together with other people and experimenting with that, coming in, discovering what prayer is, what the Bible is, that you can then find ways of directing that love. But don't be worried about the restlessness, because there is still a space left open for you at the table.
Great. So until we meet again next time,
happy voyages, folks, on the open waters, and we'll see you again for the next episode.